On my way commute in this morning to the studios of PRN, I was reminded about a new Broadway show that's doing really, really well. Lots of great press, lots of great reviews about the new Broadway show, Sideshow. Now, you may have heard about this. It's based on the legendary Hilton twins. They're conjoined. Daisy and Violet follows their heartwarming search for the first love and acceptance and the spectacle of fame and scrutiny under the spotlight. Of course, you know, being twins that were conjoined, they had a quite difficult go at it, that's for sure. Set against the backdrop of the 1920s and 30s, it's all about the show business that kind of like seamlessly blend their worlds of carnival, vaudeville, and kind of a Hollywood glamour. But it made me think about how many people are stuck. Okay, not literally like the Hilton twins, but certainly they felt or feel like they're stuck in life, whether it's in a relationship. Probably I would narrow it down to two things, relationships and work. People feel stuck. And I have certainly felt stuck in certain times of my life in both categories, relationship and work. So I wanted to lead off with this story today on PRN.fm. My name is Mark Farrell, by the way. The show is Insight every Thursday right here on the Progressive Radio Network from 11 a.m. to 12, right after Bhavani and right before Gary Noel, the founder of this great network. So have you felt like you've been stuck? I would say relationship-wise, it was around 1995, I started dating this girl. And she was great in every aspect. Beautiful, friendly, smart, successful in work. And she was lots of fun. Back then, I was a huge drinker, and she loved to bend her elbow at the bar. So we got along really well in that capacity. And overall, we got along, you know, quite well, generally speaking. So I kept saying to myself after like 2, 3, 4, 5 years, like, okay, I guess I should be getting engaged to her. So, but I never did. And I never felt the urge to say, yes, this is the woman for me. So I totally felt stuck. And I started to say to myself after first or second year, what's wrong with me? Because here I am dating somebody who's outstanding on every level. In my eyes. And in most people's eyes, because they were saying, what the hell's wrong with you, Mark? Why aren't you making an honest woman out of her? So it was a really horrible feeling to feel that I was going nowhere fast. From age 25 to just around 30. So have you been there? What have you done about this? So this show today, this aspect is going to be covered for the next 55 minutes on Insight. We're going to have a lot of questions. The questions aren't for me. The questions are for you. I'm going to insert my life story and scenarios throughout the hour here. But I really want you to kind of be cognizant of these questions. And even if you write them down and you can't answer them right now, I think it would behoove you to, again, jot them down. Or you can listen to the podcast later if you're not able to write them down now. And kind of mull these topics over. Some of them won't have any application at all in your life, and some will. Or maybe a loved one in your life, spouse, friend, etc., or even a colleague. It could benefit them. So finally, going back to the sideshow theme here, the Broadway show that, you know, it's about the conjoined twins, made me think this morning about, you know, being stuck. So yeah, relationship wise, I definitely felt stuck. And after many, many years, and after many pints of beer trying to figure out what's wrong with me, I finally realized, okay, enough is enough. And I broke up with her probably twice, maybe three times, because it wasn't like we didn't get along. You know, I went back to the well a few times, of course, you know. Great woman. She's done very well, and she's married and three kids, and that was the best thing for her and for me. So it really worked out well. Now, moving on to the professional front, I definitely have felt stuck in a job. About 8 years ago, after being in radio for 14 years, 15 years, I was starting to get a little, I don't know, not complacent, a little bored. Thinking, okay, what's next after radio? What am I going to do after radio? What could be in store for Mark Farrell after radio? So peripherally, I've always been working with in the field of disabilities, Special Olympics, tons of organizations, probably about five more other organizations that deal with persons with intellectual and or physical disabilities. And it really floated my boat, very rewarding, felt very positive, and was part of a startup company during my interim in radio that was the first magazine and website for people with disabilities. So I was really, really psyched. Unfortunately, that went south with the dot-com bubble burst. So I had an opportunity to take a position with a nonprofit in the city that they were totally head over heels with me. They were, you know, like, you know, courting me, offering me good money. So there's no reason why I couldn't say, yes, I'll take this position. And I did. But I did keep one foot in radio. I always kept my talk show. I just kept up a another position, full-time position I had as creative director. So I went over to this corporation or company, nonprofit, and worked there for about a year and a half. And I would say within the first month, I knew I made the worst mistake of my life. Within the first 30 days, actually probably even less, within 2 weeks, every aspect of this nonprofit made me cringe. Not because it was nonprofit. Well, there was aspects of that I'll get to. But mostly because it was an organization that was about 50 years old, and they hired me for my for-profit thinking and my great concepts and how we can apply them, my for-profit business model for the nonprofit model. So I get there, and they gave me a pretty good title. And I don't know whether it was because people, you know, didn't like that I came in at a fairly good level, et cetera, but I'm not a competitive person. I'm a nice, affable guy. You know, if you do your job, I do my job, we got no problem. But if obviously you're not doing your job and it affects me, then there's a little bit of a issue there. But what I found was that they were so set in their ways, these people were never going to budge, even with my great ideas. So they would say, oh, well, you have to keep working on Larry to get him to come around to see your point of view. Oh, you have to keep working about this idea or keep tweaking it or make it seem like it's the right, like all these different approaches I was getting advice about on how I can finally get my ideas to work. And I'm like, wait, you hired me to come to this organization to help bring it into the 2000s. And now you want me to waste time here spinning my wheels because you've had dinosaurs working here since the dawn of age and they can't adapt? So quickly, I felt like I made the worst mistake of my life. I remember going home to my then fiancée going, oh my God, what am I going to do? I am miserable. It was horrible. I would actually go out to lunch. And I'm sure a lot of people out there are going to raise their hand and or just kind of like be like, oh my God, yeah, I know that feeling. And hopefully you're not in this situation right now. But I would go out to lunch and it was on 33rd Street by Madison Square Garden, big tourist area. And I would walk around and I would dread the notion of having to go back to work. I've never experienced that in my life. So I knew that I just, a month into it, 2 months, 3 months into it, I'm like, well, you know what? I've heard about this. People make kind of career changes and it just doesn't work. It's not a good fit, especially people in radio. You know, it's a whole different type of medium and beast, if you will. So when you make a jump from one profession to another, even though I was incorporating a lot of what I did in radio into this other model, it just doesn't work. And it was mostly 90% of it or more due to the staff of this facility. So going back to how I felt stuck, I knew that I couldn't hang in there for that long. So where have you been in a relationship that you felt like, okay, you didn't have the cojones to speak up? And that's happened to me several times. The five-year relationship I share with you was the longest one, but I've certainly been in numerous relationships. more than I can even count nor remember due to alcohol. The great effects of alcohol. You just forget all the women that you dated for 3, 6, 8 months. But anyway, that's where I was. And so professionally, I hung in there for about, I think it was about 15, 16 months. And I had no plans on quitting the day that I actually quit. I was in an office being totally, totally micromanaged by a boss who was completely competitive with me. I don't know why. He had many more years in the field than I did and had no reason to fret that I was going to come in and swoop him out from his position. So I'm in there and he's just talking to me, talking. And it was just like this just void of words that meant nothing. And it's just him behind a desk and doing what he had to do, the push paper to dot his I's and cross his T's and going on about his monthly or weekly meeting with me and what have I done and what I need to do. And I just looked at him. I said, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt you. And I kid you not, this is how it happened. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I don't think this is working out. And he looked at me like, what? What do you mean, the meeting? What I'm talking about? I said, you know what? This just isn't a good fit. I think you know it. I've known it for a long time. So I'm going to hand in my resignation to you by the end of day's end. And I mean, I think I totally threw the guy for a curveball. So have you ever been there? Hopefully you're not in that position right now. But if you are, please listen. You do not have to spend the rest of your life or another year, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years there. Think about it. Make plans. If you don't have a lot of ties in life financially and or people relying on you, maybe you have enough money saved that you can jump ship, and that would be great. But if not, you really have to make plans and or take other classes, whatever you need to do to make that next step, or take a second job, whatever it takes. But think about it. But I swear to you, once you get out of there, you're going to feel so much better. Because once you're in a environment, a workplace situation, and it's just miserable, and every aspect of life isn't miserable. It's not like when you walk out of your work, you're like, oh my God, everything's great. Yeah, you do feel better to leave that somewhat prison-like feeling. But the reality is, it's just, you can't shed it that quickly, because especially come Sunday, you're like, oh my God, Monday's tomorrow. No, how am I going to deal? Yeah. So that's that. So that's what I wanted to share with you about my seeing the billboard for Sideshow this morning, the Broadway show about the conjoined Hilton sisters, about being stuck. So please do what you need to do to get unstuck. And if you have any questions, run them by me at markfarrellmotivation.com, Mark, M-A-R-K, at Mark Farrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. It's PRN.FM. The show is Insight. Love to hear from you. We're going to get to a lot of questions I have for you. But in the meantime, if you do have something you'd like to contribute to the show, it's 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. So overcoming adversity is our first topic in this list of questions I have for you. I mean, the show is always about you. This is your show. I share my life experiences and what I share with audiences nationally, schools, colleges, corporations. But when I was planning for today's show, I realized that there's never been a show entirely about you. And I mean, yes, the show is always about you, but I mean, I'm going to totally tailor the show to possibly what is holding you back, held you back, what is difficult for you to cope with on a daily basis, maybe things down the road that if you have some information that you're armed with, it can help you out a great deal. So overcoming adversity would be the first category we're going to be talking about. So the first question is, what was the most difficult event you've experienced in life? And how did you survive? What was the most difficult event you've had in life, experience in life, and how did you survive? So now I'm going to insert some of my stories here to give you examples. But certainly feel free to call and share one of your stories. in this particular topic or the five other ones that we have coming throughout the next 45 minutes. Now, there are a lot of different, if you listen to the show often, which I hope you do. And also, by the way, we're streaming, video streaming on PRN.FM. PRN.FM, of course, you're listening now live. But if you want to watch the video stream, you can do so. So, overcoming adversity, I am going to insert one. It was a hard choice. And this is not a big thing if you think about it, after I tell you what I'm inserting here, how I had to overcome it. But at the time, it was huge. And it was very, very embarrassing for me. Hugely embarrassing. But when I was in high school, I didn't do well academically. I had C's, maybe a couple B's. Of course, you had the A in gym class and woodshop, and that helped. But, you know, I didn't do well. I didn't fail anything, but C's were, you know, pretty much my status quo. So getting to colleges was a little bit of a trial and error. But actually, the three colleges I applied to, I got into all of them. The only one I really pursued in terms of going full-time and finding out whether it would be on a probationary basis or not was William Patterson College, William Patterson University, actually in Wayne, New Jersey. They accepted me under one condition. It was on performance base only. So the first semester, I had to prove myself. So everyone's saying, oh, I'm going to this Ivy League school, that Ivy League school, or I'm going to Rutgers. Actually, Rutgers is obviously heading towards Ivy League status because they're in Division I now. Not doing that well, but anyway, I digress. But so I was really mortified that I had been accepted to college, but only on a probationary status. But at the same time, I said to myself, okay, well, this is a good thing because this can really fuel me to really perform and really hunker down and do my best. And so that's what I did. I got there. In the first semester, I was only permitted to take three classes, 9 credits. Living on campus, taking 9 credits. So that left me a lot of time, a lot of free time to get into trouble. So we're going to pause right there. I'm going to get to what you have to say and what possibly where, what event, what happened to you in life. Was it possibly the loss of a parent? Overcoming the death of a parent is gargantuan. I mean, those are one of two people in your life are the pillars of your life, the rock of Gibraltar. In most cases, for people, they mean the most for them. They represent, you know, your life, your childhood, teenage years, and hopefully you didn't lose a parent prior to the end of your teenage years. So what did you do to survive? You know, did you have another parent to, you know, lean on? You know, what tools helped you cope? You know, keep positive. And this one really doesn't apply in this situation, but, you know, are you a better person because of this? Now, at first you say to yourself, well, how can I be a better person because I lost somebody? Or you have to apply this sentence or question I'm asking to whatever scenario that you're thinking above. About that bubble above your head that says, oh, I'm thinking about how I broke down in the middle of Oshkosh and had to walk 30 miles and was almost hit and ran out of food. Who knows? I mean, I'm obviously being a little exaggerating here a bit, but what was that form of adversity that you really had to reach down deep and kind of become something that you never thought you were capable of? We all are. Like, I teach spin. I've told you this before. Spin is one wheel on a bike, and people ride like crazy. You burn a hell of a lot of calories. It's a fun workout. I teach this because I'm a cyclist. I've always loved bike riding. I'm an outdoor cyclist, road cyclist, and this keeps me in shape big time, even when I don't have time to ride outside, weather permitting, et cetera, et cetera. And one thing I always tell people, because there's a ton of people in my classes that I push really hard, and then there's the 10-15%. They just kind of lollygag around and whatever. And that's cool. Hey, they're at the gym. They're working out. They're doing their thing. They're clearing their head. And it's a hell of a lot better than sitting on a couch or being idle doing nothing. But I say to them, and we all know this, that your body is so much more capable of doing more than you can ever realize. So if you think you're really working hard at something It's your mind that's telling you, oh, okay, I can't take this. But your body will adapt, especially when you're talking about workouts over time, 2-3 days a week. You build up on that base, et cetera, et cetera. So in life, the same thing is true. An adverse condition. You know, once you come out the other side of it, you're usually a stronger person. Typically, you can be a different person. But that doesn't mean you're weaker. With all the things I could have thrown in to my overcoming adversity blank here, I do have blanks on the page here, I kid you not, because I want to think of this as applying mostly to you, because it's for you to kind of ask yourself as we go out through the rest of the hour here. So what was that overcoming adversity aspect in your life that gave you the run of your money, the run for your life? You know, what did you have to do to get through this? If you'd like to share, it's 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. The call's on us. Call's on Gary Nell, so don't be shy. What you can do is email me, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Mark@markfarrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. When we come back, we're going to be continuing this little dialogue. And we're going to be talking about bullying. Were you bullied? Did you bully? How'd you get through it? And mental health, drugs and alcohol, self-entitlement, and more. When Insight continues on PRN.FM. So if you ever wonder what the heck I'm doing when you hear those nice promos that Casey makes during the break, sometimes I'm certainly thinking about what I'm going to be talking about, collecting my notes, but just then, I listened for the last 5 minutes about all the different shows on PRN.FM here, the Progressive Radio Network. And sometimes, you know, you're too close to things to realize how good things are. And I have to tell you, man, there are some really great shows on this network. Really, really great shows. I mean, it runs the gamut. Finance, health, fitness, politics, you name it. And it really is unfettered here. I mean, if you want a true opinion, an honest opinion, you may not agree with it. And that's great, because I think it's totally invaluable to listen to viewpoints that you don't agree with, because it makes your viewpoint maybe even stronger, or allows you to see something from a different perspective. Because how would life be if we all agreed, right? But again, I was just happy to kind of hang back here with my headphones on, put my feet back on the table. If you saw me here online, I was just really kind of taking in all different shows. Anyway, enough of that. Here we are. So back here, the show's Insight. My name's Mark Farrell. Live every Thursday in New York City on Upper West Side, 11 a.m. to noon, right before Gary Nell and right after the great Bhuvani. We're talking about things that affect you. The show's all about you, as it is every week, but I'm asking you specific questions today. These are topics I address all the time in live audience fashion across the nation to schools, colleges, and corporations. So we talked about overcoming adversity. We actually talked about, at the beginning of the show, the new Broadway show Sideshow, about conjoined twins. And my parallel there was, have you ever felt stuck? I mean, of course, they were literally stuck at the hip. Actually, the show is getting really good reviews. So if you do want to check it out, please do so, because the reviews are pretty astonishing. Very cool. So now we're moving on to anti-bullying, anti-teasing. So when I talk about this, first thing you think about is school, like when you were younger, but that does not have to be the case. If you're an adult in the workplace, it's very common to have workplace bullying, harassment. Doesn't have to be sexual. Could be just performance-based. You know, Larry, did you get this to me? Why didn't you get this to me? If you don't get this to me, you know what's going to happen. I mean, any verbal assault of that nature, and that was kind of a lame example, but that's the best I could do on a moment's notice. But let me ask you this. Why do you feel you were bullied? Whether it was in school, and if you want to go back to those school years, I don't want to have you back on a therapist's couch now, but why do you think you were bullied? Is it something that maybe you thought differently, you dressed differently, you spoke differently. Maybe you even smelled differently, because if you came from a very ethnic household, there was always a lot of cooking, and obviously the food aroma permeates the air. And I've certainly gone to school with kids that, you know, smelled like different types of food, sometimes very good. Makes you very hungry. You don't want them sitting in front of you right before lunch. You don't want to eat their coat. But why were you bullied? And how did it stop? What did you do to stop it? Now, I've had shared many stories over the last year about being bullied. And I'm not going to go into those now because they're in previous podcasts. You can listen to those. But the bottom line is that, you know, bullies exist. Bullies will always exist. There's no way to completely banish bullies. It's a personality flaw. And I think a lot of our history, mankind's history, is based on being a bully. You know this. This is nothing new. Have you ever chosen to be a bully? I did once. And it was a very short lifespan of being a bully, probably about 15 minutes, start to finish. And what made me stop was that horrible, horrible feeling I got in the pit of my stomach, knowing that I was doing something incredibly wrong. Why was I doing this? For all the wrong reasons. To get attention, to make people think I was a tough guy, maybe to make up for my lack of academic performance, certainly sports. I was a poor performer due to my visual impairment. So maybe if I could be a tough son of a bitch in a locker room or to some people who would probably not put up a fight to me or wouldn't be a fair fight if they did fight back, maybe I'd be perceived as kind of a cooler kid. For all the wrong reasons, I did that once. Physically once, verbally more than once. So did you ever choose to be a bully? What made you stop? Were you ever a bully because you were bullied? Pretty common. So again, I'm going to ask you these questions. If you have the opportunity to jot them down, if you're at work, you can't possibly listen and write everything down and perform at the height of your job performance level. So we're going to move on now because you can always go back to this show on our podcast, as I mentioned. Mental health. Have you ever experienced depression? And how did you recognize that you were depressed? Now, depression is kind of a hard thing to explain. We've all get sad and we kind of, you know, whether it's just due to maybe work. You're just not happy at work or a relationship. Or for some unknown reason, you just feel kind of blue. And it happens. It's totally normal. Maybe it's just because it's, you know, just a kind of a lackadaisical humdrum time in your life. Maybe everything's kind of going well. And that's actually a very important time to realize that you do have things in check. But sometimes people will be like, well, I don't know. Things are okay. Everything's just kind of the same routine, kids, school, bills, debt, work, new car, bills, tuition, braces, you name it. So people kind of get into kind of a downtrodden feeling. So it's very easy to experience that. And then for most people, the majority of people, they take themselves out of it. It's just your natural brain chemistry just kind of evolves and changes and you just start feeling better or stop focusing on maybe the negative things. So if you ever were depressed, how did you recognize this? Did you feel like your moods that were prolonged in a kind of a bad way, a dark cloud way, didn't lift as long or didn't move on as fast as they should have? Or maybe you felt your routine was different. You stopped going to the gym. You stopped hanging out with your friends. You started gaining weight. You started sleeping less. Possibly some other side effects came into play. Maybe you started having panic attacks. Man, I hope not, because panic attacks, I wish them on not even my worst enemy. It's kind of like you feel like you're having a heart attack if like you ever have like a really close call in a car or something in life and your heart feels like it's going to just burst out of your chest. Well, that's what a panic attack feels like. You can actually even give yourself a panic attack thinking about, oh my God, am I ever going to have a panic attack again? That's like a self-fulfilling, really bad prophecy. So what helped you through all this? And a lot of these are tied together. Overcoming adversity. Mental health. Because if you totally give up, you give up, man. But if you have willpower or the insight to say, oh, I need help, I need to seek professional help, or maybe even just a friend who's been through this, or just somebody who's very, I don't know, has a good acumen for labeling things and maybe understanding you like no one else has. Maybe they even understand you better than the person you're with. And that's fine, because certain people have a knack to extract and to really pinpoint people's personalities and understanding sometimes what you're not able to articulate. So the last question in this category is, how much more do you know about yourself? So I'm going to apply myself in this situation. I didn't know squat about mental health besides what I learned about in college. Psychology 101. Yeah, right? You know that. until my brother took his life. And then I realized, wow. I mean, I never in my wildest dreams understood how people could take their life or lives. It just kind of, you know, just was so perplexing to me. And even after he died, I'm like, okay, he was depressed. But still, how can you take your life? And I started going to these meetings from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and would meet other people and hear their stories of the people that they lost. And I would be like, how can someone take their life? So then a few years pass, and then slowly, now I feel like it was very slow, but I guess it wasn't that slow, depression or anxiety started creeping in into my life. So I was like, whoa, I would feel like physically off, almost like off kilter. You ever get off a boat, like a sailboat or even a motorboat for a day, a half a day, a couple hours, and you try to get your sea legs, you just kind of feel off kilter. So physically, I started feeling weird. I was like, wow, what is this sensation? It's very odd. And then one day, I remember walking across my living room floor and I had a complete body rush. I cannot explain it any other way. If I can, head to toe, I felt like this huge whoosh, like whoosh. And I was like, whoa, what was that? And it was fleeting, literally, I don't know, maybe a second. So that was my body chemistry change, my chemicals in my brain changing. Dopamine, serotonin, etc., depleted. Not making enough. So I started like feeling like, wow, what is wrong with me? So maybe you have felt like this. You were, first of all, totally unsure what was wrong with you. Then you started to have a sneaking suspicion, wow, maybe this is what depression feels like, or anxiety, or panic attacks. So then maybe you got good at hiding this because you didn't want anyone that you work with to realize that you were depressed. Or maybe possibly even someone who depends on you, a mother or father, or a wife or a husband. You didn't want them to worry. The same old excuse, I don't want them to worry. Well, they should worry about you because they care about you and they can help you. So I would put on my best face and go to work. I mean, I should have won every award underneath the sun for hiding the fact that I was completely coming unglued at work. But nobody knew it. Inside I was freaking out. I lost like 15-20 pounds because of sweating, the panic attacks, anxiety. Could not focus. I couldn't even read a paragraph without my mind going like whew, somewhere else. So have you ever experienced anything like this? If you're nodding your head or you're kind of like, oh wow, yeah, I did. I never knew how to label that. Well, then these are signs that, you know, you need to look into and to think about. And again, replay this show and see what other things apply to you. We want to make sure we get everything in here today. So I'm moving on to the next topic. One of my favorites, bartender, drugs and alcohol. Never had a problem with this. Was it a problem to stop? First question to you. Was it a problem, ever a problem, to stop just after one drink, one toke, one line? I mean, okay, where do I start? Wow, this is so much here. I did so much cocaine when I was in college that I have so much access to, I should say. My roommates were dealers. Unbeknownst to me, sophomore through senior year, in the beginning, I did not realize I was rooming with dealers. Actually, they weren't known dealers. They just kind of grew into that. Can you grow into becoming a dealer? Can you evolve, or is it called devolving? Or plummeting, spiraling down. Anyway, we had a damn good time. We did until the state troopers, undercover state troopers came in and turned over the whole place, and one of my roommates went to jail for a couple years. But I don't want to bring us down here. Let's keep it up. I'm very positive here. But was it ever a problem for you to stop after just one drink? I know for a lot of people, they can do it. I can now. Sometimes it's hard, though, because, you know, you get that one little, you know, one drink in you, and it's a great little buzz going. It feels good. Toke, I don't smoke anymore. But there's certainly a time where I couldn't just take one hit off a joint. What about Coke? Were you able to do just one line? No way in hell. No way in hell. I would rather not even do one, but that was even hard to do than to just do one line. So now this says a lot about your personality. Now, fill in a blank here. Why do you blank? And how does it feel? How does this make you feel? Let me ask you that again. Why do you blank? Could be drink, smoke, pills, pharmaceuticals, you name it. How does it make you feel? So do you do it because, going back to our last category, you feel depressed? You have lots of anxiety? Maybe you smoke. A lot of people smoke cigarettes because they know they are just infiltrating and creating this terrible, terrible lung situation for themselves, but it eases their nerves. It calms them. So that, for me, is a translation to say, when people tell me that, oh, it's very calming, that they have anxiety. Now, I could be totally, totally off basis here, but my interpretation of that, when they say, I just feel more relaxed, you know, how much more relaxed do you need to feel? You're at work, or you're going to a movie after dinner. You know, at dinner, don't you feel quite relaxed? But you had to have a cigarette. So that's my interpretation of people saying, oh, they have anxiety and they don't know how to label it. So that's why they smoke. Now, whatever you filled in the blank with when I asked you, why do you blank? This is the next question that you need to apply to that. Did you start to fit in because of doing and or using blank? I did, certainly. There are so many things that I could not do in school and college that I thought, certainly, hey, Mark Farrell will be the large man on campus, big man on campus. I'll have a keg party. No, let's have three keg parties a week. Couldn't do a lot of sports. Certainly couldn't excel academically. But I could be the funny man, large man on campus, the womanizer. Why wouldn't people want to hang out with me? What was the major influence that led you to blank? Kind of going back to what I just said. Was it feeling alone, feeling unpopular? How about bottoming out? Did you ever come close to really hitting rock bottom? Maybe ever getting arrested? Now, this could be also alcohol as well. We were talking about drinks before. So it certainly doesn't have to be drugs. It can be just alcohol. And if you're saying to yourself, oh, I only have a glass of wine a night. But is it 7 nights a week? Every week? Every month? 365 days a year? And you say, oh, it's safe. It's not life-threatening. But if you can't remove that element, that variable from your life, you have to really kind of question yourself. I mean, we can all rationalize so many different actions that we have and habits. Sure we can. Absolutely. I mean, I go on and off the Coke wagon. I mean, Coca-Cola. Like right now, I'm kind of on it, kind of off it because my wife is off of it. She lost like 10 pounds just from giving up soda. And she wasn't even heavy. She'd have like one a day, one every other day or so. But, you know, you're talking 150 calories, 140 a pop. You know, it adds up. It's it could be easily almost a day's worth of calories per week that you stop ingesting. So going back to alcohol, but is that something that you imbibe in? So again, more questions for you to kind of ponder where you're at life-wise. Now, the next category we're going to embark on is entitlement. And I want to preface it by saying that I think, I'm not sure if this would have existed 10 years ago, if this topic would have existed for me to broadcast and or pontificate like self-entitlement 10, 12 years ago. Because I think we live in a whole totally different world right now. So before we get there, I want to give out the number again because I see some people on hold. We're going to try to get to your calls. But if we cannot, our producer will certainly get your message and or question to me. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Streaming live, always on PRN.FM. Show's Insight. Moving on to self-entitlement. My name's Mark Farrell. And one of the first questions I wrote, these are in no particular order here, is would you hire you? What makes you so great? Now, there's a reason, a thought process here. Because so many people that I talk to are looking for jobs in different industries. And they're like, well, I don't understand why I'm not getting hired. And there's a lot of reasons why, because maybe you just don't interview well, or maybe because they really have somebody in mind already and they're just going through the motions of interviewing people because of EOE, Equal Opportunity Employment laws, stringent laws. But there's also the possibility that, you know, you come across as being possibly overconfident or interpreted as full of yourself. And more of like when people interview, it's like, I've done this, I've done X, Y, Z, yada, yada, yada. But as I'm sure many of you and most of you know, that it's not what you've done, it's what you can do for company X. Now, this is kind of a different example that we're given here, but that's how I wanted to lead into it. Kind of a softer approach here. So be cognizant of when you're going for a job. It's not like, again, what you've done. You can give examples with working for Procter & Gamble or Bloomberg or whatever the company was, big or small, and how your ideas and your productivity could be applied to different methods in the company that you're currently speaking with or will speak with. So why do you think you feel self-entitled? See, I didn't want to start out with this because it would be like, what? Are you picking on me? But it's true. Why? I think certainly all of us feel entitled to certain things and to different degrees. Do you feel, is it just because you're angry or maybe lack of money? You grew up with not a lot of luxuries or hardly any luxuries in your household. Maybe not a lot of love. Maybe no parents. So you feel really gypped. And you get angry because of this, and totally understandable. But what happens is, when the rest of the world can pick up on this, then you're in trouble. Because then, you kind of don't stand a chance, unless somebody kind of, you know, calls you out, and says, hey, listen, man, you really are displaying signs of being self-entitled. So many people, especially the millennials, they feel this way. And this is a generalization, of course. But I guess when people feel that they should have a job when they get out of college paying $80,000 or $100,000 and they have a political science degree, you know, are you kidding me? What is your life experience? What are your contributions to humanity? Forget even professionally. What have you done on this earth? You know, so what building, street, holiday, whatever should be named after you and why? You know, were you raised this way? Did your parents ever say to you, you know, you're the greatest? Don't let anyone ever tell you you're not. Hey, as a parent, I'm all about building confidence. I do it every day, multiple times a day to my kids. But I also tell them things they do wrong. And I tell them why they do it wrong, or sometimes what will happen if they keep doing it wrong. And I would in no way, shape, or form tell them that they are the best of what they do. Because you got to be realist. Because when these kids go out there, after high school and college, it's the real world. If they think that the world is going to, you know, kowtow to them or coddle them, they're going to be sorely misled. So will you raise your kids this way? Another question. Would you raise your kids this way? And how will you be remembered? So I guess to kind of sum up the entitlement aspect, I would say that Do you feel that what you've done so far in life should open so many doors for you, and that it's not necessary for you to reach out to people, that people should be reaching out to you, even friends, for going out at night or to make plans for vacation? Well, so-and-so never calls me, so I'm not going to call them. Well, it's a two-way street in life on every aspect, except for maybe professionally speaking. You have to be the pursuer. So there's so many different examples that I give when I speak to students, especially high schoolers, that feel like the world owes them something and they don't have to work hard to obtain what they want. For example, I'll say, how many people have iPhones in the audience? And I'd say about 80-90% of the hands go up, if not more. And I say to them, okay, how much do iPhones cost? If you think they cost $100, raise your hand. And the majority of kids will raise their hands at $100. They have no concept that the phone costs retail. I think it's what, $500-$700 now? Maybe even $800 for the newer ones? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe not $800. But the question is, their parents are paying for these phones and the phone plans and the lavish cakes they're getting from the cake boss that costs, you know, oodles of money. And by the way, a side note here, I had a cupcake the other day from the cake boss, and I really didn't think it was all that. No way. Believe me, I didn't wait in line, and I wouldn't go there, because when I lived in Hoboken before he was discovered, I thought they were a good bakery, but I didn't think they were anything to write home about. Anyway, getting off track here. So anyway, do you think you know people like that? Maybe teenagers. Are they teenagers? Are they adults? Have you ever had kind of an altercation or run-in with them because you have a different viewpoint or you were brought up differently? Yeah. It's very common. It's very true. And sometimes, you know, it's kind of hard to interpret people who feel entitled, but then sometimes it's so crystal clear, so big time easy to spot it. So those are the things we talked about. Overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, mental health, drugs and alcohol, self-entitlement posed a lot of questions. So food for thought. So hopefully this was insightful, opened your eyes. And I urge you to listen to this podcast again. And if this won't benefit you, maybe you know somebody else that'll benefit. One of the categories or a portion of the category, etc. So we're kind of in the thick of the holiday season here. Oh, by the way, if you want to email me on any of those topics, feel free to do so at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Farrell spelled like Colin Farrell. mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. So we're in the thick of it. And so with that, especially in New York City area, countless holiday parties. And it's actually kind of funny walking around here later at night, anywhere between like 6 and midnight, because you see people who don't typically get inebriated, and you're like, oh my God, man, I hope they weren't really that, like, out of control at the company party. And the reason why I bring this up is because a friend of mine went to his corporate party last night. And he told me quickly on the phone this morning that there were a few people that were totally, totally out of control, and he was embarrassed for them. So, and I think we've all been there. And this is 2 points to this, me bringing this up, because number one, it's funny as hell to see this happen. But number two, it's really a bad career move on the whole, depending on what industry you're in. But the bottom line is people are going to judge you on what you do. So, you know, the key is, like, you know, moderation is everything, right? You know, you definitely drink, but don't get drunk, or certainly don't get out of control, because, you know, your judgment goes totally out the window. Don't up and end up in the center stall with, like, your spouse, your boss's spouse. Or don't even flirt with a man, because that's going to, like, take you nowhere fast. And, you know, it's just, it's fun. Like, you know, I've been in radio for years, and we have some great, great parties. I don't know what Gary Knoll's plans are for our holiday party yet. He hasn't announced them yet, so I guess he's still looking for a venue. And if any of the producers outside know of where our party and when it's going to be, let me know so I can tell our listeners, because we would certainly want you guys to be there for the open bar part, at least. Maybe not for the lobsters and filet mignon. But anyway, so I've been to many, many parties. The radio parties are probably, I can't say they're Hollywood-like, but I mean, I imagine Hollywood parties are really, really, and Vegas parties are crazy over the top. But radio station parties, the ones I've attended, have run from like when we were really kind of, I worked for a jazz station. It was kind of, they were fun. But when we worked for a rock station and our sister stations were all together, a hip hop station, an R&B station, let me tell you something. They were very, very colorful. All kinds of things happened, and it was a great time. So my word of advice to you is have fun. Let down your hair just a wee bit. But just remember, Monday comes around real soon, the next day, and people are going to remember how you were at that party. Hey, I had a great time talking with you, as I do every Thursday, right here on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Check me out anytime at markfarrellmotivation.com. If you'd like to have me speak at your college, corporation, school, all the contact information is there. Gary Knowles next on the Progressive Radio Network. Have a great holiday season. Talk to you next Thursday. Enjoy.